And welcome, welcome, welcome. Good evening. I almost said good morning. But good evening, good evening, good evening. And yes, dear listeners, we find ourselves on this, in the middle of the week, actually. End of the month. Also staring down a new into the new month, which is a handful of hours away. But it does not mean that the discussion on the business and economic zone is halted in any manner or is stopping. No, there's always things happening. There is always things happening. But for now, starting off on the, just as a little bit of a roundup, before we get into, the main gist that I actually did not finish off on last night in terms of just going through the inequality report, in terms of sharing that with you, or some of the discussion points that stem from it. Just as a small roundup, it seems that the OPEC Plus guys are once again making moves in terms of either reducing further production or increasing a little bit. And this is heading into the last leg of the year, which is technically is only December itself. Now, that is coming as there are major pushes, obviously coming from both the West as well as also the pressures coming from China's zero COVID policy. Now, you can also expect into the new year, because of China's zero COVID policy, further pressures in the global supply chain to come. Why do I say this? Even though the rest of Western media believes that, with the recent protests that have sprung up with disgruntled Chinese residents and citizens there within the country, that some form of change is coming. No, unfortunately, these just how Chinese residents and citizens are showing their frustration in terms of being under lockdown procedures, which is in effect having a mental impact on them. It's understandable. I mean, if you are in a lockdown and then out of a lockdown and then into another lockdown and out of another lockdown, that has mental implications on you, as proven by psychologists the world over. But that doesn't speak to anything. That doesn't speak to any form of social changes coming on there in China. All it speaks to is that it is hampering the economic machine that China is known for. Firstly, being the world's factory, and secondly, its rate of consumption. Heading into other moves as well. Yes, the recent announcement by the central bank, our central bank, in terms of adjusting by a good, 50 basis points? Just want to be sure about that. Yeah, by adjusting or increasing the repo rate by 50 basis points is actually conflicting with some analysts here in Namibia itself, where they were actually expecting a 75 basis point, even going further. So that would indicate that the governor was, or the MPC, not the governor. I mean, he has to consult with the MPC itself, that they were working in sort of like a very conservative approach, very conservative. You don't want to spook as much because you don't want to make drastic changes. Now, this obviously does mean that borrowing between banks and the central bank will become a little bit more expensive. It speaks there to local inflation in the country, trying to, maintain it as well. But this only speaks that your borrowing power or your ability to borrow or any current loans or mortgage plans or whatever you call it might change a little bit. I say a little bit. It depends obviously on what product you make use of in terms of the private sector credit extensions that you bought into. It depends on which one. But obviously, this is still going to be a little bit of a discomfort for the Namibian consumer. Yes, guys, we all are consumers. Those of us who have taken out some one or other form of credit, which is a loan or loans, yes, there will be some pressures that you might foresee, some changes coming into the new year. Now, that's a little bit of the roundup, a little bit local, a little bit international. Obviously, most of it is dressed up as current affairs, but it is actually in a form business news in and around. Because the ongoing global supply chains are still constrained and they are still experiencing supply pressures. They are still experiencing it. Now, formally into our discussion for this evening, the global inequality report that I stopped at, or, you know, was also about to finish last night, however, just not being able to do so. Don't worry, guys, especially for the callers that contributed last night, it was not your fault. There was no fault, there's no mistake, nothing of that sort. It's just a sense in terms of the inequality scenario has many entry points, as I will always repeat. Now, the researchers themselves indicated that the report represents the most up-to-date synthesis of international research efforts in order to track global inequalities. They noted that the data and the analysis presented are based on the work of more than 100 researchers over a period of 4 years, as well as all these researchers feeding into a global database. Now, contemporary income and wealth inequalities are some of the very large things that they've noticed, or large disparities that they've noticed. Firstly, an average adult individual earns, on average, 16,700 euros per year in 2021. That's now globally. And the average adult owns approximately 72,900 euros worth of income, or assets, or properties, whatever you can call it. Now, these averages really and actually mask wide disparities between both and within a country. For sure. Because if you say globally, obviously you would take the biggest or the most earning or the highest earning, and then you take the lowest earning countries, and then you try to spread them over the globe. Thus, a masking, a facade takes place. A facade is constructed. A facade hides, okay, so what does the global south look like? Okay, what does the global north look like? All right, what is the income disparities in the global south between the have and the have-nots of the global south? And then you do the same exercise in the global north. Then you try to find out, okay, what's the scenario here? What could potentially take place? Now, the report also mentions that the richest 10% of the global population currently takes 52% of global income. The richest 10% of the world takes about 52% of the global income. Whereas the poorest half of the population, the global population, earns only 8.5% of it. That's a very small number. Now, on average, an individual from the top 10% of the global income distribution earns at least 87,200 euros per year, whereas an individual from the poorest half of the global income distribution makes approximately 2,800 euros per year. An individual from the poorest half of the global income distribution, that's now if global income distribution takes place, and then you have various categories from the lowest earning to the highest earning, where the lowest earning makes 2,800 euros a year. 2,800 euros, guys. It's very small for a year. Very, very small. 47,600. Divided by 12, that's 3,900 a month. It's very small. Now, earlier today, with a small meet and greet session with a friend of mine, the scenario obviously speaks when you zoom in on Namibia. The question always exists in terms of how do you address inequality in the country? The last caller last night indicated why doesn't, you know, some form of income redistribution takes place from the more well-established businesses in terms of how they pay one or other form of a tax to the traditional authorities. The traditional authorities then have some form of a mandate in terms of assisting local communities. I mean, it's a wonderful idea. I mean, if you even spread it out and expand on that idea, it does sound wonderful. The only question that the only concern that I would have that any other Namibian has is, will those traditional authorities actually be audited? Will they be audited? You know, will they be able to submit financial statements of what they did and proof of work and proof of investments and proof of assistance? You know, those kinds of things. I mean, you would assume for such an example that this is the most grassroots connection that you can have with whatever power, without whatever powers that be, in terms of trying to initiate real investments in a community or within communities. All right? But then obviously comes one of the glaring examples of, like, last year, and I know this is with the Environment Ministry, Minister Shifeta. I can't remember where this community was. I think it was in Balfour's Bay or Swakopmund. I just don't know which of the local traditional authority it is that is based there. But it was concerns with regards to the ministry was providing some sort of a payment per year or per month scenario. And it was massive sums. If you think about traditional authorities and the real work that you would want them to do, and then you see what the real life examples look like, the reality on the ground, you would have much more concerns than NAMRA collecting taxes directly from the businesses that operate in the vicinities of these traditional authorities. I mean, I would have more trust in NAMRA than a traditional authority. And I'm just being very, very conservative even. Very conservative. Even though traditional authorities help with forms of governance, forms of policing even, forms of law and order, you know, they try to assist with certain things. But in so many cases, I mean, if some ministers like the Minister of Justice, Yvonne Dausop, heard about some of the traditional courts that were suspended by specific traditional leaders in the South, but there are outstanding issues on the ground. And when she heard about it, she was like, now, why are you guys not continuing with your roles, your crucial roles in the communities? So, to the caller of last night, it's a noble idea that you suggested. It's a truly noble idea. But I think a lot more character investment needs to take place, i.e. meaning you get to hire the right people into a traditional authority, because you want the authority to look like a professional entity, because you want to deal with professionals, and you don't want to deal with someone's cousin, who's someone's brother, who's someone's far-flung best friend of one or other influential individual, who thus, you know, might obscure and also try to derail the operations of the traditional authority? No. The best, rather, is Namara seems to be working, and it seems to be collecting just fine. Now, getting back to the discussion point that I actually started off, where just, you know, stemming from the earnings potential. Now, earlier today, as mentioned with a friend of mine, that we had a small chat, I indicated to this friend that, you know, in terms of living space, and our discussion was actually based upon the carbon footprint of Namibia. You know, how does Namibia have a carbon footprint? But Namibia, in comparison to a country like Bhutan is right next to Nepal. It's between India and China. That's where Bhutan is. Bhutan has got 2.5 million people more than us. I think it's like they're like 4 million or 5 million. That's their population size. But the space in which they, the size of their country is a lot smaller, way smaller than ours. And they've got a lot more people per square kilometer than ours. Now, I gave her the example that just on the surface area of Namibia, if you just did a basic exercise, on the surface area of Namibia, each Namibian, for the 2.5 million Namibians that we have, each Namibian at least can claim 10 square kilometers per living space. 10 square kilometers per living space. If we stood side by side, you know, and you try to trace it now across a map, you know, on of Namibia, and there would still be spare change left of surface area of land. Thus, the question in terms comes up then, if a Namibian has so much space to operate within, then the total waste that each Namibian produces, i.e. in terms of it's just a carbon footprint scenario, would immediately be, you know, it would just be absorbed into the atmosphere or, you know, be taken away somewhere else based upon just the carbon footprint scenario. And obviously for anyone who's bought a new car, if you've gone to any of the dealerships here in Namibia, you would have seen that you've also paid for a carbon tax. This is a tax that is forwarded to us by the South Africans. Yes, you cannot even deny it. You cannot even, you can't even protest against it. The South Africans push it on the dealerships in Namibia, and the dealerships push it on to us because they've already paid for the stock, including that tax. So they're trying to make their money back from the consumer. But remember, that's obviously a free market scenario. It's obviously a free market scenario because any cost prices that you can push down the channel to the consumer, you will do it. Anything that looks like a charge, that looks like an extra cost, you will push it down the channel. Now, the inequality question then comes in, guys, where the global wealth inequalities are even more pronounced than the income inequalities. The first part that I spoke about was the income scenario. Whereas the poorest half of the global population barely owns any wealth at all, possessing just 2% of the total. In contrast, the richest 10% of the global population owns 76% of all wealth. On average, the poorest half of the population owns at least 2,900 euros per adult, which is approximately $4,100. And the top 10%.
Whether you're a fit cookie or a podaiki, 20K could be on your way. Stay tuned. NHP, we're about you.
Oma deshari ayamba, ongo diasuzo kwa diashikaha yuwala teipena ukaya foka hoki. Befimboli nyava kwenye obovaji ukadona kwa litava tipi. Beshi vike na wamo doro paichi. Ndengenga hakani filo no mola yongo dia yoyo. Oyongi tuduvali teidenge rwalu hapulu wapunga shishito. Nandake ndapalo kulimone na ukalata vahe oloka pana penya. Ahawe, ngalo inaifafa na vali. Oh, na ikuyo lifeneka nave. Paifo kunapono nkalo kukongolole no mola pone lashikenge no yukunyolifoka kalata kaeko vaya kujobo velilepo kushangifo ukalata. Ndengeno takalashike no mola ya imaiki. Telela kashona. Hello. Ahawe kesisuso u. Unomola ya ikuwa wike ndabala nale.
Ino pitirwa po koma kwa tathano gasmana ngashi suzi. Shangita okakala takoye kongodhi opo ukareke po onomora yoye. Tarira po epanjaro kran ko www.kran.na.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Now, as we come back from the extended break right there, obviously, guys, with global inequality, this is based upon a lot of data that this specific report was based upon. Now, just before the break, I was just about to give you what the top 10% of the global of the world population earns or owns, and this is about the top 10% that own about 550,000 euros on average. Now, it's a lot of money. But if you had to work according to region, according to this report, the Middle East and North Africa, that's now all of the North African countries from Morocco to Egypt and then the Middle East, is deemed as being the most unequal region in the world, with Europe having the lowest inequality levels. Now, I know. You would obviously ask, you know, now where does Africa actually feature in? They've actually split us into the MENA, which is the Middle East and North Africa region. And then you've got the rest of Sub-Saharan Africa, which is all those countries. Where in Sub-Saharan Africa, our top 10% are comparative to that of Latin America, Southeast Asia, South and Southeast Asia, as well as then Russia and Central... No, not Russia and Central Asia. Yes. Well, we're just above that. That's now the poorest half that lags behind the bottom 50%, the middle 40%, and the 10% income shares across the world. So, the picture for Sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America, and South and Southeast Asia are almost identical, except for the bottom 50%. Africa's one is on par. That's on the bottom 50%. Africa's bottom 50% is on par with that of the MENA region. So, once again, and this is even drawing back to the discussions we had last week here on the Business Economic Zone, where we've got so much abundant natural resources. But the connections, the connecting ability of, if you try to eliminate or want to eliminate inequality in one form or the presence of inequality throughout the country, you know, what mechanisms do you need? Now, this actually brings me into the main discussion point of potentially what we can do. And remember, guys, I have to stress this. This is based upon a little bit of research I had to do in terms of I watched a lecture based upon the New Economic Thinking. This is the YouTube channel that exists. And they all just speak from economists who provide various analyses and analysis based upon various facets of the global economy. Now, this specific lecture, and I know this might sound like story time, but essentially this is what the message conveys. This specific lecture from the lecturer, and I'm speaking under correction, his name is Han Han Ju Chang. He's Korean. He's South Korean. He's presented in the US. He's presented in the UK. But this specific lecture he conducted was titled, Why Are Some Countries Rich and Some Countries Poor? Which speaks directly to the inequality discussion. It speaks directly to that. Now, this specific lecture, he started off from one departure point, because the departure point is what impacts us today. These are the Bretton Woods Institutes. The Bretton Woods Institutes that propagate, or they communicate, the policies, or the correct policies. Been put the word correct in inverted commas, guys. Never. It's almost like, you know, like with politics, you have to put everything in inverted commas, because you have to work on facts. You can't work on he said and she said. No, you've got to work on facts. You've got to see what cannot be altered or changed, even though numbers can be altered and changed. But still, you get the gist. Now, with this specific lecture, Han Ju Chang started from the discussion of who are the rich countries or the rich nations today? US and Europe. How did they get there? So how did they get there was actually based upon a form that we in Namibia have been trying to implement. The mechanism known as protectionism. Now, I won't go through the entire lecture, but I have to zone in as quickly as possible on the protectionism as quickly as possible so that you understand where it started from. When the UK in the 1700s was still a fledgling economy, because they were more backwards than Belgium and Holland. And remember, guys, Belgium and Holland technically did not exist as much as you would think, because they were constantly under principality. So everyone in Europe had monarchies. They had kings and queens, or princes, or principalities. England was even more backward in terms of technological, economic technologies and so forth, and manufacturing capabilities, than the entire, which is now modern day Pakistan, India and Bangladesh. Together they were known as the East Indies. They were even more technologically backward against those guys. Now, what did Belgium and Holland have over the UK? They had the ability of manufacturing cotton. They had these, you know, like textile manufacturing, which drove the economy of that time period. So through a few movements, machinations, elections and the likes, they brought in not Robert Walpole. He's a very famous British politician of that time. But there was a specific politician that came in that introduced protectionism. You fast forward a little bit after the United States achieved their independence from the UK, they did the same thing. Protectionism. They introduced protectionism. If you want to come into our economy, you've got to play by our rules, meaning the policies that we've got here. Currently, if you had to look at Namibia and understand, this is a good 300-year project that these two countries had to run up until 1900. The only economies so far that practiced, and they are now deemed as, if you have to put them in a separate class, and remember, I will always use this, the former CEO of Namibia Training Authority, Mr. Bierkus. I don't know if it's Jerry Bierkus or what, but Mr. Bierkus, who was there, he, you know, tried to emulate the same, if you understand, he was just a CEO, guys. He was not a minister or president. I mean, obviously, a minister or president would have more clout in terms of driving economic policy from the lofty positions that they already have. Because Germany and South Korea are the only two countries in the world, And you can look it up, guys. They're the only two countries. Firstly, they practiced protectionism. Secondly, what they did was they based their economy on vocations. The skills that you had there, you make the skills work. Now, a second example I gave you guys last night with regards to there were only two political leaders in the world in modern economic times who actually contained inflation by telling companies, you are not going to increase your prices year on year in order to mitigate and nullify inequality. I will not mention the first guy's name because he was the reason why the Second World War took place. And the second one was the US President Dwight D. Eisenhower, by my namesake. And what they did is they met with companies and they told them, if your profits have been $1 million this year, your profits will stay $1 million next year. You will not increase. They actively introduced a form of policy in order to mitigate inequality. That's why the reason, if you guys ever wonder why the baby boomers is the age range of 55 to, they now 76, they're about 55 to 76, they're about, or 55 to 65 or 67 currently there. They would be some people's grandparents right now and some people's parents directly right now. The baby boomers had an abundance of jobs, and that actually started ending here in the late 80s. Abundance of jobs. Most products, consumer products, if you can call it, was within earnings ability. And I know Uncle Bona knows this. He knows this. Actually, Uncle Bona would be the best example for you to explain this, but I'm not going to leverage his knowledge right now. Because back then, and this is an example that even came from an uncle of mine, and he was like, what, 21? He just married. He earned like 300 Rand, 1985, thereabout, or 1984, the year I was born. He earned 300 Rand, guys. He had a home loan. He had a car loan. He still had, and his wife, his wife was a stay-at-home wife. And he could still save money. And he still had money to spend, like, for groceries and other stuff. 300 Rand. Imagine to yourself, how do you live on 300 Rand? How? Now, obviously, this is pre-1990. This is pre-our independence. Right? The situations have changed vastly and greatly, but I'm stressing it to you now. The baby boomers, which is the generation born between 1945 and 1965, I think. No, 1959. Thereabout. There was a need for a labor force because so many people had died in the two world wars prior to that. So there was a need to try and ramp up production. Now, before I continue, a ad break is creeping up on me. However, the situation in terms of the inequality discussion was actually brought on from the 1990s. Now, after that, we'll come back right after this.
The International University of Management, IUMA, with the Umbo no number no wish we faguja, or my Tirorongo or Durataya Academic Year 2023, or Patruka, in the Rapa if you record a paparoe, more education, Ukarolongi Fukoda, either Ufe or Health and Social Science, or show my fano information and communication technology, or strategic management and leadership, Natai Monica, no tourism, or show hospitality and event management, business administration, environmental studies and postgraduate studies at Shota de Monica. Where are they? Oto Monica co website, www.ium.edu.na. Iro tarere po embiro da IUM, tikulipo pepe, mo Venduka, mo Nkurenkuru, mo Ngwediva, no mo Mpae, utadi Monika. Wirero tu hangi kongodi ya Venduka, 061, ongodi, ne, natunatu, oma wavedi hamano, inda komesho, kufetokorori rimonjira, toiko mbona kui waini rao, pamwena IUM.
Thank you, darling.
Huh? What did I do now?
Thank you for getting circumcised. You went through a little pain to help prevent my chances of getting cervical cancer. That takes a special person.
I'm the kind of guy that likes to protect my family and myself. To book for a free circumcision or to find out more, WhatsApp 081-309-2729 or visit us on Facebook at VMMC Namibia.
Now, coming back from our extended break, the scenario also speaks in terms of the same report, the inequalities report, wherein they noted that contemporary global inequalities are close to the 20th century level or early 20th century levels. Now, early 20th century, what does that speak of? That's about here, the 1880s, 1890s, just before you hit 1900. And this is at the peak of Western imperialism even. Meaning when most of our countries on the African continent did not even exist. Now, if we were to look at that, they noted that while inequality has increased within most countries, over the past 20 years, global inequalities between countries have also declined. That the gap between the average incomes of the richest 10% of countries and the average incomes of the poorest 50% of countries dropped from around 50 times to a little less than 40 times. To me, it's still a bit big, man. Even if it's just 40 times. I mean, if that at least came down to at least 20 times, then I would understand a significant drop. But they noted that at the same time, inequalities increased significantly within those countries. The gap between the average incomes of the top 10% and the bottom 50% of individuals within countries have also doubled. From 8.5 times to 15 times. This is also known as a sharp rise within a country's inequalities that has meant that despite economic catch-up and strong growth in the emerging countries, the world still remains particularly unequal today. Now, I'm coming full circle back to that same lecture that I noted. Protectionism could potentially be the mechanism that helps Namibia. I say potentially. I do not mean flat out that this is the silver bullet that says you know, we are all about to drive double cab Hilux buggies. No, it doesn't mean that. The first thing, obviously, that you want to achieve is ensuring that those that are unemployed are being employed. Get it. Those that are unemployed are employed. Now, I know it's a bit drastic to try and call on any leader, especially if it's a political leader, to go and tell the private sector, you cannot increase your margins for next year. Keep it flat. What you made this year, try and emulate it next year. I know it's an impossibility because you would definitely be stepping on the wrong toes. There's no way that any political leader has the guts to do that. No one. Well, obviously only if you're Putin or Xi Jinping, because he's actively done that with Alibaba. He actively broke up the tech sector in China. A lot of economists are reading it the wrong way, or economic commentators, but I realized what he did, and these are some of the discussions that I brought in earlier in this year in terms of how they limited internet time. They monitor your internet time, guys, in China, meaning how long you're on the internet at home. 2 hours, because they want people to go and walk outside. But how can you go and walk outside if you're now under constant zero COVID policies? Every week your neighborhood is locked down. Because Joey from down the street was COVID positive last week, and Sammy up the street this way is COVID positive this week. But they found a way of bringing the tech sector, specifically their tech companies, under control. I say under control also in inverted commas, because you don't know what kind of control. We don't know what kind of control. No one has still seen Jack Ma, has not seen Jack Ma in public till today. But I'm a bit far away. We're here locally. Now, obviously, the question to unemployment has also been covered in terms of trying to spark certain small industries, like the discussions I had last week. You know, what about allowing, you know, you take away a restriction like a fishing permit, for example, at Walvis and Swakop, to allow fishing markets or fish markets to thrive, you know, local small MSME enterprises to sell fish to the restaurants, to local communities, to family members, people in the street, wherever. To allow that to take place. Obviously, Namibia's entire income is solely based upon mining activity. Not even I can deny that. But it would at least have helped in terms of some of the deliberations wherein if that factory, that Peugeot factory there in Walvis Bay, at least participate in the sense of saying, listen, any cars made here can be sent into the rest of Africa as well. Or assembled, not made. Yeah, the cars are not made, they're assembled. Because they're already pre-assembled. The parts are already pre-assembled. Which they are. A second scenario is also protectionism itself. Protectionism is a very dangerous method to use. I say dangerous because we already have powerful companies in Namibia. There's no beating about the bush, guys. We already have powerful local companies in Namibia. Now, if you bring in protectionism in Namibia, who is 30 years old now, 32, 30, 30, 31, 30 plus years old now. My math is a bit rusty, guys. And you want to make use of protectionism in terms of trying to boost economic activity, at the same time trying to eliminate inequality. Who do you protect, actually? Is it that you're protecting the only ref, the player, the ref, and the coach, and the administrator of the industry, who's the only operator in the industry, and who's obviously already monopolizing an industry? I will not mention the scenario, guys. There's a very good one in Namibia. There's a very active one in Namibia. Second on to that is also, what does protectionism actually do for, let's say, small operators? How will they be allowed to try and do their own thing, provide their own form of value, provide their own form of investment into the local communities that they operate in? You see, not all of us, like I said, not all of us can start a cooker shop. Not all of us can be a farmer, even. There are even farmers who didn't want to farm, but they're farming today. They didn't want to farm. There are even farmers in this country who, they've got a full-time 8-to-5 job somewhere else. The farm is being run like, you know, like just from an Excel spreadsheet and emails and Zoom phone calls. Farms, guys, from lodges to game farms to normal livestock farms. And if you even come and say, yeah, but the person is not here, that person can prove to you, but the farm is producing. It's making money. And it's paying taxes, or it's paying for the salaries that are there, for the people that work there. So then, what then is your gripe about? How then you come and how do you then try to have a footing in such an argument? But I'm slightly digressing also as well. Because you should leave alone what functions, you know? Like they would say, if it's not broken, do not try and fix it. Let the thing run. It's operating. It's satisfactory for now. So obviously it means that there are other sectors. And what has been the biggest pain has always been manufacturing. Or the lack of manufacturing, for that matter. As I said, guys, Namibia does not have to adhere to anyone's international standards. It just takes a few, I'd call it investments and then guts, you know, because you've got to be brave, to make Namibia's first car. We already have the roads. So it's about striking up who can, what parts do you want to make use of? Your car does not need airbags. Your car does not need to look like the latest Mercedes, or like the latest, or like the latest Toyota, or like the latest VW. It does not need to look like that. You just need to start from somewhere. If you guys have ever seen the Russian-made cars after the sanctions that Russia has suffered, guys, there's a car, ne? I know that the Namibian army has had it, but it's a car that you see in the in presidential parades, especially on Independence Day and the likes. It's known as the UAZ. It's a Russian-made car. The UAZ, guys. Do you know that's a car that doesn't have airbags in it? If you ever had to go to the website that makes the UAZ, the Russian website, the car doesn't have airbags. Why do you need airbags? Obviously, it's, you know, a safety concern, but it rises costs. But as you're making the product, you can obviously reinvest in your own research and development, because that's how all the other companies got there. And it's the one main thing that Anicia Peters from UNAM has indicated as part of the Fourth Industrial Revolution Task Force. Research and development is what drives the modern day economy, second to the energy sources. That's all. That's all. That is all, guys, that you can do. I mean, I was so impressed, even in some of the discussions that we've had here in and around the Fishrot trial proceedings. The businessman that is part of the whole scenario, but the guy that invested in the factory at the coast, that factory has a canning and a tinning section to it. Do you know how important canning and tinning is? That means you package there. You provide more value. You package there. You provide more value. Now, that's just fishing. What about other things? Obviously, you get the likes of the livestock. However, that does bring us up to the end of today's program here on your number one talk radio station. We'll see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow evening. But now,
Omia no hambo mbari vyo kukwibiko uthemba wukukara nehi mehira kamwaha. Obo mkwati la wana mibia nungu mwango kulicha ngitha kuthemba wehi mwamaturi wa kamwaha potiako na kuchosha uthoku ngolero minge erari. O ministri yo tutu mbono viku nwa umewa no matuni no wehi maichi vitho mkwati la wana mibia auhe nui imbambe tuli ya mwamahi wa kamwaha. Okuliro ngerera omyano hambo mbali okumuna ihiro matuliro motu kondwa vekale oshako veta yomatu nino wehi raka mwaha poro shi wangungu ovetu isha tano yomburo manyebiba lino minongo yuwa lina mbali. Omwano mutenga, tushivitha ehindi mwotheri okutulungira mwotholo mana poro rata yoshirongo ngumakura mene pohona pale wombadhu mwotho ndende lando Shito wachiri kukusha omurana nganda weye operi mwantuba thane no yehi mape utile na puma pia ndele hiroe. Omwana usha bali, changa morutu romachitiro wa mani ngido wa uthe mbao kumune. Kutodo ndola dhana mibio mirongo iwa lina ndano kuhona pari wambadhu dhorutu romachitiro wa mani ngido nupewe oshira ithiro shomathu tiro. Weda korutu rokudha kuhona pari wambadhu oshira ithiro shokucha wathutu nochihere ngurua shoka urukonji ukiro po o passporta po ombapira yonkwa teronu ya njako mshangere po oshira tashehi podo mbero dhorukondwa. Oturutu tomani ngiriro tulipodho mbero odhombadhu na po ministri yopopedhu na ove. Omwano ucha tatu, oba ungule wa ministri yotutu mbono vikunwa, omeba no matuni no wehi, murukondoroe mabe katara lukua mwama ningiro woye, noku kareke na ehiro yendo, othoro mana po orata yoshirongo, oba mwini no murara ngandangu no uthe mba wehi, vathero kukarapo, indu chumape katale wa koma ningiro woye. Omwano ucha ine, oma ningiro woye maeshu kifi wako uleo, Wamayuba hambo mbali potuwewe troma anjero wenji vithiro kutara kukushapena mbeno umune walwe mwishinashio yeho. Omwano usha tano, uchirata chomahi umurukondwa lwe machi haamu kutara mwama ningiro weye oshako veta yomathuni no wehi edhe balorisha tano mwaveta yombura omayubie balina mbali. Omwano usha hambo umwe, oma ningiro weye shia akurwa, oshimo pewa oruturo uthe mbao kukarane hii na lihindua kombero yohona pari wambadhu kukusha ruhindwe kove. Omwano uche hambo mbali, ombapiro iche hambo ndatu mwono ombapira ndo mwurongo, maiku ningire kusha injo uye kuhuthe uparitha onjibi thironjiri yomo ruturo ye, futodo ndola dhana mibio mirongo vitano, dho kukatora orutundu ipodombero dho uhona pare uombadhu. Demburuka kusha, ehiro ye, ori ya bedhoroe, shitoma ningire ndino kukusha uri shangithi. Odo programa dhome kulithiro wehi, rochi wangungu, nonguithi kilo kudhako horomendi ya Namibia. Urwano romahi wa Europa no maungulilo wakumwe kweno horomendi yehiro bandu eishi kuturungira mombanga yome kulithiro yehiro bandu eishi. Kujibithiro wako murungu, hakaena kweno rupa romapitithiro odombude the ministry podono moranda. Onoro hambo umwe no imwe.
Ombali, ouliri, ombo datu hambo bali, omuvyu, ombali, omuvyu.